Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and happy Friday to everyone. Welcome in to the August 21st, 2015 edition of the Rick Bisio Franchise Focus. Very excited to be here today as we have a very big topic on hand today with Jeff Sieber at FranFund talking about me understanding the experts on the stage today. I'm going to really do my part to just introduce the stage here, set things up, and then turn it over to Rick and Jeff, the two experts here, while I try to add some occasional color commentary. But a few housekeeping things here. As you guys know, we've taken a little bit of a hiatus. Rick had a wonderful vacation on the West Coast with his family, and he's back in the saddle. We have a big slate for you guys heading towards the Franchise Action Network conference next month. Beginning back to Millennials and Franchising with a few shows as we approach the Next Gen Initiative and getting some of the younger folks involved with franchising. A lot of great things left for the rest of the year, but of course, as I mentioned, let's start with financing. But before I bring those two on, a few things. As always, check us out online at educatedfranchisee.com and afranchisecoach.com. Rick is working internally to revamp and revitalize a few things with his website, so take a peek at that in the coming days and weeks. You'll see a lot of exciting changes there. As always, Rick is a contributor to entrepreneur.com and to Franchise Gator. There's a new article coming up very, very soon in the next few days about how you should review the FDD and the key elements to that, so definitely pay attention to that. As outside of financing, that is certainly one of the biggest topics in franchising, how to go through an FDD and review it and make sure, when you're looking into buying a franchise, you are doing so and taking that FDD as part of your due diligence as a big element of that. Of course, and then outside of that, Rick's contributing on LinkedIn as well, doing published posts on key topics. We've posted a top 10 of this podcast to SoundCloud and thrown it on iTunes as well, so expanding your ability to gain access to these interesting insights and big and important insights that folks like Jeff and other industry experts share on this show. And, so just a lot of big things coming down the pipe. And, of course, we're expanding our, the ways that you guys can access what we're talking about here on the show and get an insight into what Rick thinks is most important and his take on some trending topics in the space. So exciting stuff there. But without further ado, this is Friday, a little bit of Friday free-for-all. We're all energetic. We're all pumped up for the show. And Rick and Jeff, thanks for saving some time for us. Looking forward to today's conversation.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. That's you start listing all those things, and I'm like, wow, really? We're doing all that?
You're doing all that, man. You're an active guy. This is great stuff. I mean, as you can tell, I'm a little bit excited on this Friday. It's a nice day. The summer's unfortunately coming to a close, but that doesn't restrict our ability to talk some finance and franchising. Jeff, we had you on a couple of years ago to talk about this topic, and a lot's changed as it relates to financing within franchising. I guess we can start with, a big topic of conversation about the credit crisis. What are you guys talking about internally? What are some of your clients asking you? I mean, is the credit crisis over? And I guess what else has potentially changed or stayed the same? I guess we'll stick to the credit crisis. Talk to us about that. Is it over?
Well, I guess as with one, first of all, thanks again for having me. I think it was about 18 months ago and I when I was last on, and the world was considerably different. And I remember that particular evening because we were in the middle of a lightning storm in New Orleans, and it was I didn't know if we were going to get through the entire thing without all power going out. So, but the things over the last 18 months are quite a bit different than they were, and we were seeing a few things there, 18 months ago, where the banks and the funders were kind of putting their toe back into the pool in the marketplace. And the SBA with the current administration was really pushing some things down the pipe. And a lot of those things have turned out fairly well, which has loosened up some credit. Also, the banks, the bigger banks right now, have finally reached the point where about a year ago, reached the point where they could no longer claim profits from just they didn't lose as much as they had written off 2 or 3 years ago. And so they had to get back into the marketplace and try to actually generate true revenue and true profit instead of just we lost less than we thought. And that's opened up a lot of a lot of the bigger markets. And as the bigger markets then start to move, then the smaller markets where most of us looking in the franchise space play become much more, that money becomes much more available. I think a couple things, though, as with all things, I seem to say in the financial space is, you know, the kind of the answer is yes and no, depending on how you look at it. We have some programs now out and some funders out in some fairly narrow spaces that are very aggressive. And then there are still some areas that are still very tight. And hopefully we'll see those things over time become more and more available. And I think if you're looking at trends, that in fact would be the case. What we don't know is going to happen is that if the Fed raises their basis points, quarter of a point between now and the end of the year, which is still, you know, kind of about a 50-50 shot, we don't know how that's going to impact anyone. But we'll ride it out and see what happens. But so I guess the best answer to your question, Greg, is of course yes, and then but maybe no.
So question: a quarter. This is just kind of a personal thing. A quarter point raise in the real world of a quarter point isn't a gigantic big change. Is it the actual percentage, or is it the fact that they actually made a change after so many years of not making a change?
You are absolutely right, Rick. The quarter of a point would not change much of anything on the math, except it's just going to kind of be a shock to the markets for, you know, I'm going to say 2 quarters after they do it the first time. And it's because we haven't had one in 8 years.
It's been forever.
And it's going to be like that first one is going to be, oh my gosh, I do have an adjustable rate note, or funders that have been working under certain fixed rate numbers are going to be going, oh, now my yield and my margins are different than they were. It'll have a bit of a ripple effect. It's already being built into it's been being built in for the last year into a lot of the bigger bank thinking, but I still think it's just going to be a shock to the system of the first time. The quarter point rate's not going to change the economy one way or other, except for the shock of it.
So do you think that banks will actually, other than being a whole bunch of stuff in the newspaper and, you know, everyone talking about it and all of that, do you think it'll actually have a real effect on financing other than the fact that maybe the interest rate may be a quarter point higher? Do you think the banks will choose not? Because, like I said, everyone knows it's going to happen, so it really shouldn't be a surprise at some point.
Right. They're going to pass it on, Rick, especially, you know, the one thing that everyone has really gotten kind of used to is most of these small business loans, whether they are a conventional product or an SBA-backed product, mm-hmm. have been set on adjustable rates. And so, you know, the bank is just going to pass that. They're just going to pass that straight through to the borrower. But it is going to be what you just described. I mean, it's going to be the headline in every paper. It's going to be Chicken Little skies falling, you know, for the first 90 days thereafter. And then I think we're going to be fine. But people were really going to realize that they do have adjustable rate loans. You know, I remember we started putting in when the adjustable rate started really coming to vogue, which was about 8 years ago when you started seeing that versus fixed rate stuff in the commercial space.
Mm-hmm.
We kept cautioning people that, you know, you could do this. Well, some of those people that had 7-year notes cleared through the whole thing without one single raise. I would have never in a million years believed that would happen, but
yeah.
It is what happened. And I just think it'll make people a little more cautious on some things, maybe slow things down a little bit on with some of the borrowers. But over the long term, the rate really is probably about 3 points lower than it should actually be. So, you know, that quarter of a point's not going to matter.
How has the borrower changed? And if you think about a couple of years ago, and you know, I think we were at 730 or something like that, a minimum credit rating, and now it seems like the criteria to be a borrower today is far more relaxed. It's more like it was in 2003, it seems, than it was. Have we totally recovered, you might say, in regard to
you know, you may
that.
Think about it, Rick, that you may feel like to you that it's back at like it was in 2003, and because, you know, most of the people you see, the answer to that question is yes. The credit score is not the only factor now. It used to be such a hard factor. It's still a very important part, but it's not the only part. But, you know, we can go down to like 680 credit scores now. But that's a fairly hard stop. What I mean is where you're back in 2003, 650, 640, 625, deals were able to be done. We're just not seeing that many credits in that range right now of people that are looking for credit because they're not able to, you know, they used to be 625 and be able to bring a significant amount of cash to the table because they would go get a home equity line or everything around them was appreciating and they could find access to cash. And that's we're simply not seeing many of those today. Where we were 18 months ago when we were in the 720 range, we were in the 720 and, you know, short sales, bankruptcies, high credit card debt, all those things were immediately disqualifiers. And we're now where that the banks are taking a more thorough look at the borrowers and looking at them as if they, you know, are good credit people, which has been, you know, a person that got caught in Phoenix or Las Vegas and the residential stuff there that just, you know, tumbled down the line, even in Florida where you are, Rick, to a certain extent, you know, those a lot of people there got caught in
that. We had
a
cliff.
And the banks are now recognizing that these are good credit people that got caught in a bad situation and are much more amenable to looking at that stuff if it's 2 or 3 years behind instead of waiting the full 7 to 10 years. And so if their credit's recovered and they're in the 700s, we can a lot of times, and there's short sales or bankruptcies that were regarding the, you know, the mortgage crisis are 3 or more years behind us, we can usually work with that person, assuming all the other criteria is met. So, but 18 months ago, I had to tell you, nope, that's all just going to like kick it right off the board. The biggest thing that we do see where that they're the most, the banks are the most, still have a real, something I guess what I'm going to say is they just don't like it, is very high credit card debt. You know, when you see people with $40,000, $50,000, $80,000 on credit cards that they're not paying off every month. I mean, you know, there are people that do that, that have $20,000 on their credit card debt, but they pay it off every month. But the guys that have amassed a large amount of unsecured debt on a credit card are, those are harder deals right now than short sales and bankruptcies, to be honest with you.
And they should be.
Interesting.
I mean,
let me ask you a question, Jeff. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rick. I'm sorry.
No. I'm just saying I agree. I mean, I think they should be. If you're carrying that kind of debt on your credit card, you have bigger issues than to figure out than how to start a business.
Yeah, normally there's something else that's going to kick it. You know, the debt coverage ratios and stuff like that, or that's a true indicator that that's going to be there, and it normally is. But gosh, those are the hard ones. Those are the hard ones right now for banks to get their arms around. Is anybody that's carrying that much debt?
Gotcha. Graham, you had a question.
Sure. Yeah, I did. I worked with a client earlier this year, in the beginning of the summer when, you know, moving is in an uptick. And one of the things that we saw, a trend that we saw, I think it caters to what you're talking about with mortgages, Jeff, is that, you know, of course, that when the crisis hit in 08 and 09, you know, a lot of people lost their homes and, you know, they faced some serious, a seriously uphill battle when it came to, you know, clearing their credit and, you know, getting back to a state of financial stability. And what we saw, what we learned, and I would certainly like your take here because you are much more the financial expert than I am, is, you know, they were suggesting there's a trend this year of boomerang buyers who, you know, had that debt or that black mark on their credit wiped away if they had to, you know, foreclose upon a home or go into bankruptcy like that. And they're sort of boomerang buyers who are back in the market for new homes and other investments. Have you seen an uptick in the amount of people who are qualified not only just for a home, but they're qualified again to get loans to buy franchises and get back into business ownership because they've been able to become a boomerang buyer and come back from that those issues caused by losing their home or going into debt in that capacity?
You are absolutely correct. And you know, what I think part of this is again, the psychology of it, in that people are starting to realize that it's not, you know, you're not wearing the red letter A walking around in the financial markets anymore if you've had to go through that sort of thing.
Yes.
And that there are a lot of people out there that have. And, it, you know, as they come back and realize that they're not shunned, that people actually do want to talk to them in the financial marketplace and people are understanding in the financial marketplace, that you know, we're seeing more and more of that momentum start to build. And I'm sure it's the first place they would obviously want to go maybe back into the housing market, but we're seeing more of those folks that are, well, I'm sure that I really don't qualify, but I'd really like to do this. What do you think? And we're going, yeah, we can look, you had a 740, 745 credit score right now. That stuff happened 7 years ago. We're certainly in the mode to, you've got, and everything else in your credit is great. Let's go see what we can do. You know, that door has reopened. And you know, as we were talking about earlier, 18 months ago, it was still slammed shut. So this is a more recent thing that's really trending. And as we're seeing more banks willing to take that risk on people that are good folks that had a bad experience. And you know, you kind of have to prove that up. I mean, you can't prove that but if the story is correct and those are the things that did happen, we can actually work with those folks right now.
You've been doing some pretty interesting stuff over the last really 18 months, even longer. You know, when everybody was, I think, focused, you know, on the more traditional type of products, you've been out there, like, for example, with Supercuts, that putting together private financing, non-SBA financing, for development, you know, with select companies. And maybe you could just talk about that briefly and how you see that evolving, because it seems like you're getting a lot of momentum in that and working with more and more franchisors on a non-SBA basis, because there's lenders, it appears, that seem to be very interested in that particular space.
I can, Rick, I think you're onto what a trend is also being established. And yes, we were in that space early on. We've been there for 2+ years with certain franchisors, with non-traditional sources of non-bank sources of funding, whether that's through insurers, whether it's through venture capital groups, whether it's through just some pure capital groups that other funders have put together. They look at franchise lending as a strong product. I mean, I don't even know how to emphasize, maybe to your audience, how important that is, that product has performed so well even through the crisis. I mean, everybody knew it was performing always well when everything was great. Franchise lending performed incredibly well during the crisis, to a point where, as a lot of these folks that buy loans on the secondary market, or even, you know, buy packages and bundles of things, and they look and see what's performing in their portfolios, it was franchise lending. And because we were kind of playing in that space, we've had a lot of folks that are coming to us, have come to us and are still coming to us saying, hey, how do we get involved in that game? And it's been kind of exciting. But what we're looking at are people that are looking for a set return, a set yield. So this doesn't, as the marketplace fluctuates with the Fed for the banks, it does not for these guys. They're looking for a fixed rate of return. And then we structure products under that. So, you know, the terms are usually much less onerous. I mean, what I mean is that, but then they are hard lines in the sand. I mean, you know, when we were talking earlier about, you know, a 680 credit score with these products works all day, a 679 just does not. And so there's not a lot of wiggle room, because they're having to sell this, you know, into their investment pool, and it has to meet certain criteria. But it does make things really, really nice for the franchisee and for the franchisor when we get these things set up.
Yeah, I think not only does it help new franchisees join the system and feel confident that you know, the funding is there, and that, you know, some pretty smart funding groups are supporting it, which obviously, you know, is a real benefit. But it also, I think, helps existing franchisees continue to expand, and those are all real positive things. And I'm glad to hear that that's going to continue to evolve. What are some of the other new things that you're doing? I mean, obviously, you've got I just sent out a newsletter announcing some of the new product that you're coming out with. I think it's called Fran Select, but maybe we can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, Rick, I'm going to back up just one second for you.
Sure.
Talking about existing franchisees and their expansion. I mean, the excitement there for us is also broad. You know, you mentioned Supercuts, and we'll just stay on that topic. We have that conventional money, non-bank money that we use for them in the startup phase in the first couple of years to get those first two or three units open for them is one thing. What we've just now had is a major bank come back to us for the people for the expansions beyond that, or for refinancing. And we're talking about numbers in the 4% range, in the mid 4%. Well, and it's fixed. So it's okay. They're coming. You know, some of the bigger banks now are coming back in and saying, okay, we're going to take another little bite at the apple. We're going to look at, you know, mature franchisees that have good credit, and we're going to start putting some of our products out there. What's going to happen is they're eventually going to keep going down line and get into the startup, but they're coming back in with nice programs for expansion, which if you're a, you know, if you're a Supercuts franchisee looking right now at acquisitions or expansions or those sort of things, and you can get money in the fours, you know, it's time to move. So I think we're going to see a lot of activity from them there too. To your FranFund Select program, though, yes, that's a very exciting program for us, and I know you how many people are excited about it. We had a bank that we sat down with, and there are a lot of SBA programs out there, and we formed kind of a hybrid program with them that is SBA backed but has no SBA fees, if you can understand that, Yeah, it gets really. It was a clean sheet of paper program that we sat down and worked on together and rolled it out. And it's for under $150,000, and we can usually approve those folks. We can usually approve folks within 48 hours of submission and fund them within 5 days after that. Wow. And so we have to have the particular franchisors approved, and currently we have over 20 franchisors that are completely approved, and about another 10 or 12 that are in the process. And so we're seeing an awful lot of interest from franchisors, from franchisees, and we can do those for expansions of existing franchises too. They don't just have to be startups. So if somebody's looking for that second store, looking for that next opportunity, we can certainly use these type of funds for that. There's also no outside collateral required, which is normally a big problem for folks when they want to use an SBA product. Taking a second position on their home, taking a second position on their portfolios, those sort of things. In this case, none of that attachment happens. So it's really and we can do these as little as 0% equity injection. So, you know, we have folks that say, you know, we had one of our borrowers that said, you know, this is kind of like leasing a car. I mean, one day everything was the same on my, on Tuesday I had a balance sheet that looked like this. I closed the loan, and on Thursday it looked the same except I had a business and a payment. And like we're putting a new car in the driveway. And I think that might be a very simplistic way to look at it, but in a lot of ways that is exactly what it allows folks to do. But it has to be good franchisors, and we're looking for good credit. We're not looking for people that don't have necessarily the money to put down, but that just don't want to access it. So it's a great program. It's working very well, and we're very excited about it.
That is neat. So have you had any people – well, actually, I have a really simple question. How do you get an SBA approved or SBA without an SBA fee piece? That's kind of an interesting – I don't know, just curiosity.
Well, if you want to get into the backside of the math, let's just say it's a math problem on the bank side where they are absorbing the whatever fee structure there would be in order to put that capital on the street.
So the fee is still getting paid. It's just the bank
fee is still getting paid. It's just not being paid by the borrower.
Gotcha. Does this work with all franchise companies, or does it? Let's say I was a non-franchisee buyer. I was going to open my own just bootstrap startup, and I needed to do this. Would it work?
We could possibly make the money work. We just could not make the timeline work, and we'd also probably be looking for some sort of an equity injection something above the 0 to 10% that we're typically doing in these situations. One of the keys to the product in this case is that we can validate and qualify the franchisor. And so there's a lot of underwriting, if you will, done on the franchise concept itself prior to moving that into the program. that allows the bank then to build their file for the SBA with all of their due diligence done, where that they're only qualifying the borrower based on certain minimums, based on them following the system that the franchisor has in place, which again is part of what makes this whole thing work. So I guess, you know, back to my first answer, Rick, the answer is yes and sometimes no. So it would just be a little harder for a non-franchise concept or a non-franchise deal to work through that particular program with us. We could take them down one of our, you know, FranFund preferred loans, which is much more followed along the true old style 7A guidelines with a few, you know, just a few little changes to it, especially with regard to speed as far as getting it done. That's one of the things that we at FranFund really require for the lenders that we use and the funders that we use is speed. We want to be a fast no or a very reliable yes that closes very quickly. And the group of lenders that we work with, are, you know, one of the first commitments we ask for them is you have to staff your system to handle our volume at a point that we can get the expectations that our borrowers have and that our referral sources have of us. And we've been very successful in getting those people to commit to that, because when they do, of course, they get to see more product and they get to put more deals on their balance sheet. So it's a big qualifier for us, the speed side.
The fact that it is a franchise sounds like it makes the whole process a whole lot smoother because it's already pre-qualified from the business opportunity point of view.
You're exactly right. And you know, I know that the listeners out there don't know this, but we are, you know, almost a 100% referral business, and we are about 98% franchise deals on our side, and it's been a good place for us to be, and it certainly hasn't limited our capacity. We just got to be very, very good in that space.
Gotcha. What else is going on? What are some other new things that have happened over the last 18 months that are kind of newer programs, things that didn't exist before but are here now? Are there other things we're missing?
Well, I think the part of the key structures is that there's more availability and things happen every day. I mean, well, let's say every week. It seems like I have something new to study, something new to look at. And where I see the biggest influx of that, Rick, is in the private money sector. You know, the non-bank investment sector, because they all have certain windows where they want to be, or certain places they want to be, and other places they don't want to be. I mean, some of them want to be solely in food, some of them want to be solely in automotive, some of them want to be solely in rent-to-own. It's one of those things of I was explaining this to the staff a couple of weeks ago here. It's almost like we, you know, got a couple of keys to a couple of clubs and walked inside, and then everybody that's in there wants to work with us, and we've got to sort through where the most viable people are the fastest and get those programs in place. But I really see that as a huge change. And again, franchise paper performed so well, and it's starting to get so well known that I think we're going to continue to see some really neat stuff coming out of that. I also think the SBA is going to continue to be aggressive, and it seems to be a real push. I mean, there's a lot of things about the current administration we can talk about, whether we like them or not, but they have really helped push the SBA programs through, and given the you know, they raised that to a cabinet level post and have really given it quite a lot of credibility, and it's really helped out things.
It sounds that we had, what was it, about a day and a half of scare, and it was amazing how quickly the program, maybe you can explain it better than I can, but it was, ran out of money or ran out of creditability there for a very short period of time and immediately got approved.
Yeah, you know, it's all about politics and you know, and agreement. The back door channels of that had already been agreed to by both parties that they were going to and they were going to fund the shortfall, and there's a shortfall every year. I mean, I don't want everybody to think that that's some kind of odd occurrence. The SBA is self-supporting, so I mean, it actually uses no government money; it just has a government guarantee. But the government guarantee, they set a number every year, expecting it to be short, because they don't want to take on that contingent liability on the budget, because then it has to go into the budget until they know about what that total is going to be. So somewhere normally it's in August, September that they hit that cap. Well, this year they hit the cap in late July, and then there was a panic about the congressional recess that they weren't going to be there to do it. So they attached it to the first bill they moved a bill forward on veteran funding that everybody could agree on, and passed it on a voice vote, and we were done. From Thursday was when the hands went up and said, "Oh my gosh, we might be out of money." And Monday it was all done, and Tuesday the president signed it on the plane as he was flying back from Europe.
So there was really no big deal. So when there's no financial exposure, when it actually makes money, the government can move quickly.
Yes, exactly. When they go, hey, this is something that actually puts money into the Treasury, yeah, let's make sure we get more of that.
Yeah, yeah. So it is possible. That's funny. What is the same? What has 18 months ago was in effect and is still relevant today? What are the things that have continued through this whole thing?
Well, you know, that the SBA 7A program and you know, our take on it, which is the preferred programs, are still very, very strong. And they have a little bit of weakness. I mean, that $150,000 to $300,000 loan range is still a tougher deal than the bigger ones, simply because of all of the compliance issues that have come into place out of the crisis, and a lot of the things in Dodd-Frank that apply to those loans that are that small, which make them more expensive and harder to do for the banks. But they're going to figure it out. I mean, you know, they do figure it out. They just whine about it a lot. because it's just not as profitable as when you get bigger. And so, you know, mm-hmm. but you know, you have to find some lenders that are willing to work with us on that size loan, knowing that we have, you know, larger loans that we're able to slide to them as well. So it so that their average portfolio dollars come out okay. The other thing that's still around is that, you know, we're still big in the rollover for business startup transaction, where you can use your retirement funds tax free and penalty free to invest in your business, and that is still a huge strong product here. We are experiencing record months right now in that particular product line. And the idea of using, you know, money you've not paid taxes on instead of money you've paid taxes on and investing that into your business is a real attraction for an awful lot of folks, especially the higher tax bracket people. It becomes a really nice play. And we can use that. All of our funders, the SBA and our private money funders, will use that, will allow that to be used as the equity injection into the loans, which is allowing, again, people to sometimes say, okay, so I can do the 30% or that I need down out of my retirement, out of the Rob's transaction, out of my, you know, as I've accessed that money, and then go to and then put a loan for the other 70% in place. So I'm they're much more comfortable on looking at some larger projects or looking at some multi-unit projects in order to do that. So that product has been, you know, around with us for, you know, a long time. It was really used in a different way through the crisis, because sometimes that was the only money that we had available. But now we're utilizing that old product in a new way for leveraging the lending side as well. So I'd say that's something that's old. It's still an old, steady, reliable way to maximize the leverage of your assets. But then the conventional programs are still, you know, some of those old ones we talked about earlier are still there, just chugging right along. So they were never affected and are not. They're looking for a certain yield. We're still able to give it to them, and they're still ready to fund. So we still have some of those things there as well.
I tell you, I love the with the Rob's program. People went through this, and there's people who did get hurt, obviously, during this downturn, this credit crisis, and they're a lot more debt sensitive than they were before, and probably should be, you know. And I love the retirement rollover program, just simply for the fact that you have no debt. It's an equity transaction, and it allows you to use pre-tax money, but you don't have debt that you have to carry. And so I think it has a very relevant part of an equation, and sometimes you wrap debt along with equity, and sometimes they just use equity, but it's still a pretty cool product, and has a real, I think it's really the only product in its space that does what it does for people.
Right, I agree with you. And the neat thing, Rick, and I agree with you, people being a little more cautious about debt load, in that we have, when we start down that path, a lot of folks will say, okay, so I can have 30% injection. What about if I put 50% injection?
Exactly.
And then we start looking at the payment they want during that first 4 or 5 quarters of that loan to make sure that during the startup phase there's never stress. Mm-hmm. And it changes the whole dynamic of the business. And so even though people would have the ability and we would fund more money on the debt side, they're willing to utilize that product to keep their payment at a place where, you know, they're not staring at the ceiling at night wondering, having any trepidation over what that debt's going to mean. So it really has become a really nice way to, you know, we're able to custom mold a funding program for each person instead of saying, oh, here's what you get. And it gives us a lot of flexibility there.
Absolutely. So what's next? Talk to me about your crystal ball on the future. Where are we going from here? Do you have a crystal ball?
Yeah, I wish I did. I wish I did. I wouldn't have to work much anymore. But the what I think I see. I think the programs that we have in place, because a lot of programs that are year to year on the SBA. I mean, they do get renewed every year. I do see this, us being able to continue things like the Select program. I think that's, I have no doubt we're going to be able to get that renewed for all of, for 2016. But I also do, and I know we've kind of beaten this horse a little bit, but I do see more and more people coming into the marketplace that are not traditional bank lenders. We're in some situations where EB-5 groups are, the Visa program groups mm-hmm. are looking into the franchise lending space. We're into some things where private companies that are major players as franchise or consolidators are now looking to run their own captive programs and get those funded. And we're also seeing a lot of money from, while the U.S. banks have a lot of restrictions put on them from Dodd-Frank, the European banks do not. And the European banks are starting to come into the marketplace in a way that there's not really good investment opportunities or as good investment opportunities in Europe right now as there are in the U.S. And I think we're going to see more of, I think we're going to see more foreign banks coming into play in our space over the next year. So I guess, Rick, those would be my three kind of out there projections for you.
Yeah, interest rates. Obviously, nobody can really get a whole lot of money on their money right now. There really aren't any good alternatives. And so if you can get into a predictable loan environment, I can see why a lot of, high wealth, either individuals, groups, organizations who have money and they're trying to find ways to invest it right now would find this to be very attractive. What happens if interest rates go up to 10-15%? What, at that point, do you still think that they will be looking at franchising as an investment alternative than loans, or do you think that'll change if
there's out there? There's a part of me that thinks, one, I don't think that's good for the economy, so let's put that in context, because we don't know what those ramifications would be. But if you look at simply the math of what would be available, what additional monies might be available, we'll have a lot more outside people that want to play at that rate, and even the ones that are playing now that aren't tied to, the Fed rate, that are tied much more to yield tables that are internal. In other words, I've raised this amount of money and I need to make this amount of return on it for my investment group.
Mm-hmm.
Those, of course, aren't affected by the Fed rate.
That's
so that it becomes, those programs start to even look stronger.
Gotcha.
And I think we would continue to see that. One of the neat things, and maybe I should have mentioned it earlier, is that our attrition rate of customers is less than 3%, and our loan failure rate in loans that do not end up being paid is great. And we do mostly, we can sell those businesses off and the franchisee becomes, or the borrower becomes whole. I mean, that's the normal thing that happens. But, for us, we have to study those and say, why did we, would we do that? What did we miss? Or was there anything that we missed? We're under 1% on those.
Mm.
And so when you look at that 97 to 99% success rate that we're playing with in the franchise funding space, that's real, real attractive.
Yeah.
For an investor. I mean, it's almost unheard of. And right now, just some prudent underwriting techniques and making sure that you're working with the right franchisors and you're working with the right candidates allows us to put those kind of numbers on the board, which is why we're having the opportunities to look at, in the folks that are wanting to get into the game.
Very neat stuff. I look forward to doing this again in 18 months and seeing how well.
I'm wondering, did 18 months ago, did I have any projections on what I saw the world looking like then? Because I
really should have listened to that and called you on it, right?
I'm kind of interested to see how much I missed the mark.
I still have that recording from back then, so we could go back and listen to it and see how well you did.
I have another question before we shut it down for another 18 months and we come back and see if the crystal ball is accurate. but heading into an election year, of course, politics is top of mind. And You were fortunate enough to have someone in your office yesterday who could have given you potentially some insights on, you know, what's going on, and talking to your legislator yesterday, and I think that's particularly timely as we head towards the Franchise Action Network Conference coming up next month, and how that allows franchise leaders to get together and sort of share our message on Capitol Hill. I guess take us through a little bit of what you learned yesterday. You know, if it applies to franchise or to financing, great. If there's other takeaways that our listeners can benefit from, that'd be great to hear too. Give us a little bit of the inside scoop on what happened yesterday and what you guys talked about.
Well, we were very honored yesterday to have Congresswoman Kay Granger from the 12th District of Texas, which is where we headquarters and where I actually live as well, visit our offices here at Fran Fund. And a big part of her coming, there were really three main reasons. One, you know, our group here, we've over the last 3 years with the people that we've helped get their businesses financed and put in business, you know, we look at it and in a very conservative way, realize that, you know, that's led to the creation of 10,000 or more jobs, and likely a lot more than that. And right now we're close to, you know, opening three new businesses a day start, and that's a real, real fun place to be. I mean, it's a very rewarding place to be on our side, and our group around here enjoys that every day. And Congresswoman Granger had heard about that and wanted to come and visit and see what was going on in her district. And she is also on the Appropriations Committee and has been very instrumental in helping both with the SBA, you know, as we went through that, you know, quotes crisis, but she was one of the people that said, hey, let's make sure this all gets done. And then helping franchising with the joint employer stuff that's out there because of the National Labor Relations Board, a couple of those proposed rulings that they have. And she's been very much on the side of franchising and is getting more and more involved in it. So we are we're very happy to have someone in her that sits as highly respected as she is in the Congress to start to look more and more at franchise issues. And then, of course, she was, you know, it was just a thrill for me and for all of our staff here to have someone like that come and just want to see us and talk to us and talk about things both here in the local markets and nationally. And it was a very enjoyable afternoon, I must say. We had a really nice time.
Awesome. So as we head to the Hill next month, is there anything that we need to keep in mind to fight for as far as opening more doors for folks trying to access financing to get into franchising? Is there anything that we can say to our legislators of our own states when we head that way?
Well, I think there is in that you know, one of the key points, there's going to be a lot of franchise talking points, of course, that, you know, there's several issues out there that from healthcare to minimum to, you know, unfair allocation of minimum wage to the joint employer to, you know, what is full time and those sort of things that are out there. Right. But when we talk about the financing side, it's, you know, actually a lot of thank yous for the way that the SBA has been supported and for the fact that there is truly it is a program that does not cost money. And I think, as odd as it sounds, I think sometimes our congressmen even forget that, you know, you're only allocating risk that's never been had. The SBA ends up putting money back into the Treasury every year based on the fees that they charge. So it is a government guaranteed program that the insurance policy that they're required to pay for actually, puts more money in the coffers than it takes out. So it's I think that's an important part. And then if you want to know something that's a little bit closer to my heart is a lot of the regulation they're trying to put on small, they're trying to apply a lot of regulations in the 401k space and in the small plan space that they're putting on the major corporations and those sort of things. They're putting those restrictions on lower and lower down the, you know, they're going to start implementing on smaller plans, which is not going to affect our clients all that much because of the third-party administration work that we do here. But it's going to, I think, keep a lot of small companies in the future from putting those retirement plans in place for their employees, which is just, in my opinion, wrong. I mean, those plans don't need to be as scrutinized as the investor and the trustee and all those sort of things as the big guys do. So I'd like to see them kind of, you know, have a much more rational attitude. But I don't think that's what you want to spend your time lobbying on, but it will be me.
Yeah. I think there's going to be a lot of talk about NLRB and a fair minimum wage that's equal for all players.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And then the other thing, the other big thing that, I mean, the thing, I don't know how, I think they're going to want to focus a lot just on the, you know, joint employer role. That's the biggest thing, and then everything else is somewhat minor.
Yeah.
But the joint employer thing is the thing that we just have to get resolved. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to that point, Kay Granger was the leader on the Appropriations Committee, which made sure that no money could be, no money in the budget could be allocated towards the setup or the enforcement of anything that came out of the LRB on joint employer, and got that passed. So they can rule all they want to, but they have no money to do anything. They specifically not only don't have any money to do anything, they specifically are banned from doing anything. So.
The House
still does have a little bit of power.
There's so many ways to go after this stuff. That's why I'm not a politician. I never know all those back angles.
Yeah, that was her. She led the charge on that. So that was a pretty neat thing on her part.
Very cool.
Well, if I am an individual who does have some cash, and maybe I'm a boomerang buyer, or I've been smart with my money, and I'm looking to buy a franchise, and I want to use you guys over at Fran Fund to do so, how can I get in touch with you and learn more about your company?
Well, I think the best place to go is the website. And it's www.franfund.com, franchise funding, FRANFUND.com. There's some information there that kind of will go through some of the things we've talked about today, as well as, you know, there's a click on the thing that says, you know, get funded now. And we have all of our consultations with our staff here and with folks that are absolutely free. There's no charges on our part until you tell us that you're ready to go, and let's go get the money together. So, but up until then, anything you want to know, any additional things from what we talked about today, any ways that your particular project, we can attack that, we just have those conversations with you to try to help you understand things.
Awesome. Well, no, we really appreciate your time here on the Franchise Focus today, Jeff. I know it was certainly very, very educational for me, and I know my listeners as well. And looks like this is a very good time to, you know, check back into your finances, see if you had a house or you had some financial difficulties when things turned southward. 2008, 2009, the time may be right for you to consider getting into business for yourself again.
I couldn't agree more. It's time to at least dust that off and see what might be there.
Absolutely. Well, Jeff, now Rick and I very much thank you for joining us today. Thank you for being a part of the Franchise Focus.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Talk
thank
to you
a lot. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, before I cut everybody loose, just want to give everyone a reminder that we are re-energized. We're back in the saddle, and we got a big slate coming for you guys, our listeners, for the coming months as we head towards the end of the year. Talking about things again, like this Franchise Action Network conference coming up, like financing and franchising. As I mentioned, contributions to entrepreneur.com. He's got a very interesting piece coming out talking about how you should go after and take a peek at the FDD as part of your due diligence process. Keep tabs on his websites, educatedfranchisee.com and afranchisecoach.com. As big changes are coming, and the information you can access in those places is going to be extended and be very clear and easy for you guys to access. And as always, track the action entrepreneur.com or franchisegainer.com for Rick's contributions. Check out our top 10 hits on SoundCloud and access our podcast on iTunes as well. And be sure to track Rick on LinkedIn too. Connect with him there. And follow his published posts, as he is always willing and open and excited to share his insights and his knowledge on the big trends in franchising. It's a Friday afternoon. Get after it. Have a great day and enjoy your weekend, and we'll be coming back at you soon. But, Rick, thanks as always for joining me, my friend. Have a good weekend, and we'll do this again soon.
Take care. Thanks a lot.
Good afternoon, everyone. Have a good one.